Me, this is my biggest question. What, when I was young, what's wrong with humanity?
Yeah.
And to me, that's opprobrium, come ego, come reactive mind, which is storing all this unreality, this dream world we've created to justify ourselves. We're stuck in this dream world that we've created, like we're actors in our we've created a part for ourselves, a story, an illusion, and we're playing that part out in life. And this, to me, is what Swedenborg had to remove, and what we'd all have to remove, the unreality, to get into reality, the unreality we've created to justify ourselves, our own self-created world.
Our consciousness. So true is a light. That's what shows up, what is real or not real. Okay? Now, Swedenborg's spiritual sight was opened for a purpose. That's the other important thing. There was a purpose behind it. And the reason that his spiritual sight was opened and he came to see how the spiritual world worked, right, was directly related to expounding the internal sense of the word. He needed to have experience of how space and time were experienced in the spiritual world in order to give an understanding of references to space and time in the word and expound those in a way where we are able to leave space and time behind and move into the spiritual meaning that's there. So there is, because there are people who enjoy Swedenborg's spiritual experiences, enjoy that whole psychic side of things, but aren't really interested in the word. And in those cases, the point has been missed. The two can't be separated. They are something that happens together, and the only way the internal sense of the word could be opened up was through having this almost sensory experience of the dynamics and the principles that operate in the spiritual world. Okay. The other thing, that the gradual aspect of it, is necessary, and truths are absolutely vital. Understanding of truths is absolutely vital, so that you don't go over the edge, so that you don't go insane. Because what he experienced at times, he talks about it, was terrifying.
Mm.
Terrifying. And you get the sense of, he says that, that the Lord protected him, pulled him back. Well, the Lord did that by means of his understanding, by means of understanding truths. So the Lord protects me is a truth. My understanding of divine providence is a truth, that nothing happens unless the Lord allows it to happen. Now, in our own experience, if we're going, working with some issue, internal issue in our life, that just seems so big that, whether it's some negative emotion or whatever it happens to be, understanding that that is being allowed to come forth in order that the Lord can deal with it, and so that I can be free of it, gives me a very different perspective on that event that's happening if I didn't have that knowledge and was just overtaken by whatever that negative emotion might be. And the same thing's happening here. I'm just going to, on the first page there, here's a couple of experiences which, would be absolutely think about this, if you were experiencing this. So it just says here, as I was meditating on these things, an angel said to me on behalf of the Lord, in a moment you will see and be visually convinced of the hellish nature of that love. Sorry, six.
Well, you've gone.
Page one, 661.
661.
Third of the way down.
That's
fifth. Oh, yeah.
Three or four sentences.
Okay, so as I was meditating on these things, this is about the love of self. An angel said to me, on behalf of the Lord, in a moment you will see and be visually convinced of the hellish nature of that love. Then suddenly the ground to the left opened up, and I saw a devil rising up from hell. He had a square hat on his head that was pressed down over his forehead to his eyes. His face was covered with a pustular rash, as if he had a high fever. His eyes were fierce. His chest protruded misshapenly. He was belching smoke from his mouth as if he was a furnace. His groin was visibly on fire where his feet should have been. He had just ankles with bones but no flesh. His body gave off a rotten, filthy heat. When I saw him, I was terrified and shouted to him, "Stay where you are, but tell me where you are from."
It's probably pretty obvious.
The response was an honest one. "I am from below," he answered in a rasping voice. "I live there in a community of 200 people. It is the single most important community of all. All of us there are emperors of emperors and kings of kings, dukes of dukes and princes of princes. No one there is just an ordinary emperor, king, duke, or prince. We sit there on thrones above thrones and issue commands to the entire universe and beyond." "Are you aware," I asked him, "that your fantasy about ruling the world has made you insane?" "How can you say such a thing?" he replied. "This is exactly who we see we are, and our colleagues acknowledge it too."
It says something about the love of God. I'm not sure if we see it straight away. I'm not sure if people who read this for the first time see it straight away. But understand that this guy that looked so terrible to Swedenborg did not look like that to himself or to any of the other people he did. He literally looked like he believed and talked about how he looked. And it's a fascinating aspect of the love of God that he allows people, even in the hells, to look as if they are not only normal but super normal.
Thanks, Mike. So this experience would have occurred much earlier on. This is true Christian religion. So this is right at the end of Swedenborg's life, and he's added this in to illustrate points that he's been making about the love of self. And so this illustrates that. But I'm sure at the time, you know, he says he was terrified when this happened. You know, like, it's, you know, can you imagine it? You know, it would be something horrendous to have happen. But what is he seeing? Whose love of self is he seeing? That's right. He's seeing his own states. He's being led in to see his own states because the spiritual world is where?
It's within us.
Couldn't you say, David, just drop it if you don't want to deal with it? Couldn't you say that it's actually okay seeing actual individual created beings, consequential outcomes, and also seeing aspects of that that are real for him personally?
Yeah, because it's all in us all.
I accept that.
Yeah.
I think if you say it's his own,
yeah,
I tend to say not only his own, but it's elsewhere too.
So if we abstract it, what he's describing is the proprium.
Yes.
That's what he's describing, a manifestation of the proprium, which is in us all. But in order for him to have access to the spiritual world, it had to be a going into the spiritual world as he had contact with it, as it was organized within his own states. Because he can't
Which is true of us.
Exactly.
True of us, because I can't go with it in a David Miller way.
No.
I can't do that.
No.
I can only do it in a Julian way.
That's right. So what Swedenborg had to be shown, and this is the whole process of regeneration that's involved here through self-examination, is what's there. We have to come to see what's there, and we have to come to accept what the Lord teaches concerning what's there. Because until we come to accept what the proprium actually is, it's got us. When we accept what truths teach concerning the proprium, if I accept that the proprium is totally evil and false, and I also accept the truth that the proprium is not me, then I get distance from it. It no longer can get its clutches into me. And I rest in the proprium the Lord gives me, which is my understanding of truths. And I'm protected in that. As long as I sit in my understanding of truths, I'm protected. But as soon as I get drawn out of that and start believing the appearance, it assails me. You know, I get caught up in negativity or whatever it happens to be.
Just a quick question. Did Swedenborg know what this apparition represented? That it represented his proprium?
Certainly at this stage.
He did.
I think. Right. And, but early on it was probably obscure and vague. You know, but I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. The next one is a fascinating account. This is from his spiritual diary.
Can I read it for you?
Yeah, go ahead, mate. That's great.
I was in a street and saw a number of knives, and a fantasy was induced that with these knives they would cut my throat. For evil spirits are such that in fantasy they think themselves actually to do what they are inclined to do. Wherefore a multitude of them rushed violently forth and endeavoured to point the knives at my throat, this laying hold of the slightest pretext to put me to death. I spoke with them, and it was shown that their perpetual effort was to kill me, but they were restrained by the Lord, so that they scarcely knew that they made the attempt. But as soon as ever the restraint is relaxed, they rush on again in their murderous design, which with shame they confessed.
Yeah. You know, so this is not easy stuff. You know, this is confronting, frightening experience that's happening here. And I mean, I don't know, I'll ask the question. You don't have to answer, but you know, have people had a frightening spiritual experience at all?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'll relay one that I had. I was woken by a like something thumping down. There was a noise. And I woke and my eyes were fully open, and there was a person standing next to the bed with a raised axe. And it was a shock. You know,
put it mildly.
Yeah, my heart was just about pounding out of my chest as I sort of saw this. And as you strain to look to make sure that, you know, that you actually are awake. And immediately what came was, you're looking into the spiritual world. And immediately I was fine. I thought, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So
just a minute. When you said to yourself, I'm looking into the spiritual world, the man went.
After. Slightly, there was a delay and then it was gone.
Any message?
But he was seeing the man with his spiritual eyes. So with his natural eyes were open, but inside his natural eyes, his spiritual eyes also opened. And that was where that's how he could see the man.
It was just before winter, and the man said, don't forget to sharpen your axe.
So
when the man disappeared, his natural eyes were still open, but his spiritual eyes closed.
But the point was this. It was an affirmation about how knowledge of truth gives you an ability to have an experience and not be overwhelmed by it. So the truth was, you're looking into the spiritual world, and that's what came as thought, I believe, from the Lord. And so that thought came, and then it wasn't such an issue. You know, still dealing with the physiological aftermath. But that's
did you get a message from it all?
No.
It's the thing of get thee behind me, Satan, the Gospels, where that experience and your ability from intellectual understanding of truth can dissolve it and put it behind you so that it no longer works.
Right.
Right. That kind of idea.
Yeah.
You overcome it.
Yeah. So the next one is even more fascinating. This is 4530, if someone else would like to read.
4530. There was a certain female who inwardly cherished such a hatred towards her parents at home that she thought of taking them off by poison. And as she imagined that I was willing to marry her and deceive herself with the fantasy of being married to the man of her choice, she was at length, upon finding herself disappointed, seized with such a hatred that she thought of murdering me. Had it been possible, Sarah Hasselia, she having died not long after, and before the faculty of speaking with spirits was opened with me, it happened that I was impelled to put an end to my life with a knife. And this impulse so grew upon me that I was forced to hide the knife in my desk and thus to remove it out of my sight. I have now discovered that that woman was the spirit who prompted the impulse. She, having become excited as often as I saw the knife, and from the enmity which she had convinced against me, having held the object fixedly in my mind, from this it may appear that men may be unconsciously infested by the dead who have cherished hatred towards them.
Oh,
strong stuff.
Women, of course, are too smart for that.
Can I share an experience that I think is almost universal, that reminded me of, in not the woman thing, but just the sort of basis of it. I've been on a train platform many times and experienced the pull of the train track and the jumping over. Okay? London Underground, here in Sydney, still there. I am attracted in some shape or form to dash myself over the edge. And it's a pull, it's almost magnetic, and it's almost physical in the way it works with me. And I know that it is not me in that strange sensation. It is from something else than me, because obviously I don't feel like I want to throw myself on that train track, but it's compelling.
You can often feel when you feel an anger that's like almost a passionate anger, I think you can actually put that down to some sort of external influence over you from the spiritual world. Anger or fear, or even something that I struggle with a bit, is a sense of inadequacy.
I've had a different sort of experience, just it's okay. In the kitchen, you get a knife out of the drawer. And Brian happens to be in the kitchen, and the thought has gone through my mind more than once, I wonder what it would be like to thrust it into somebody. And then the thought just keeps going, and I keep doing whatever I'm doing. But that has come to me. It's just a wonder. I wonder what it's like.
And I see that. I see that as linked with what I was talking about yesterday, with us here being a kind of physical sensation experience for spirits to get a kick. You see? So it's a kind plant, because you do something and you get this wow.
But my mind says that's an evil spirit telling me to do something. There's no way I'm going to do it.
Can I ask the question? I've had those too. I've had them with my kids. that in my ear. And I just died, and I'm not angry with them, nothing.
Yeah.
But, so what then is this, if this is a purely good and evil story, I guess I give myself the credit for stopping myself, but it's perhaps the Lord intervening. I'd like to hear, because we're hearing there's evil spirits, so the positive spirit side. Can you help me with that one?
Sure, you didn't do it.
Or jump on the tracks, or jump.
Yeah.
I did jump off a bridge.
So here I stand on a high cliff or something without rails. I'll think, you know, well, what would it be like to just hop over?
And are you saying that's knowledge that evil spirits can do that to us, that's protecting us? The Lord has given us that knowledge. And that becomes our protection.
Yeah, so we get, you know, it's fascinating. So we relay these experiences that we've had, right? What gets laid out in the writings is how that all works. And so the greater understanding you have in terms of how it works, the more equipped you are to actually deal with it when it comes up.
Dismiss it.
Either dismiss it or... Use it as a reflective tool to come to see what we are capable of without the Lord being there for us.
Like you said, with that your experience, it's all in us. We're capable.
Yes, of course, that's right.
Circumstances do.
And I think what I pick up from you, David, is the important thing. It is an understanding thing, not an emotion. Because our emotions play havoc with us, whereas our understanding is that. Okay? And I get it and I'll use it, but it's not in my heart, it's actually there.
We can use our understanding.
That is tremendously important for us, and we can knock. We can knock only knowing and too much understanding and head stuff and so on, but golly me, we need it at certain times.
We can use it to overrule.
Yeah.
Not emotions.
No, but the kinds of truths that protect us are truths that, so we talk about going from obscurity into more light, and the reason is that, you know, the Lord's providence is over all things. There's a general truth, you know. Yeah, I believe that, you know. And then, you know, why is this happening? Like, you get caught up. Why is this happening to me? Blah, blah, blah. You know, someone cuts me off, you know, let out a few expletives as they drive on their merry way. And, you know, and all of this. And then, and as you begin to work with that, and you say, well, hang on, what's that about? You know, and you come to accept that things that are coming up for you are actually under providence as well, whether they are good things or apparently bad things. You come into a sense of confidence that providence really does or really is over all things. And the stronger that becomes, so this is where the affections are grounded in that truth, and it's that kind of knowledge. It's that affectional, experiential knowledge of the Lord's goodness that is able to protect, not just knowing about it. Won't probably lead to the same level of protection, but actually having experienced the goodness of the Lord and knowing that He would never let anything happen to you from it in terms of your internal life that will overwhelm you to the point where you can never come back from it, can hold you.
In the story of David and Goliath, David says to the people of Israel who have been terrorized by this giant, I'll have him, I'll take him on, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And so they take him to King Saul, and King Saul says, makes you think you can do it. David says to King Saul, I looked after my father's sheep. When a wolf came, I killed it. When a bear came, I killed it. When a lion came, I killed it. I can take on this giant. So he had gradually built that experience, a wolf to a bear to a lion, to now he knew with confidence that he can take on a giant.
Yes.
And what he was doing with the stone, which is the truth.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. With a stone.
Very simply.
A stone, and it's a worn stone, you know, so which represents as something that's been used. Yeah.
I sometimes wonder. I see this as a testing by the Lord to exactly that process, so he knows how I'm going to react in a particular situation, so therefore he knows how he can use me, because he has already put me through a test and know I will come out on his side, and therefore I will be of use to him in that situation.
Yeah.
That's, I see it as testing. Is that
so? There is no temptation that you get led into. Well, deal with the leaders and not into temptation, but there is no temptation you experience that is a spiritual temptation that you won't overcome it.
But it may sometimes
won't feel like it at the time.
But maybe the first wolf, it didn't quite hit it perfectly, so he had to have a few goes and build up to the point where the Lord knows he can use you in that situation,
right,
and you will always be successful.
I'm sure there were many wolves, many bears, many lions, and the more of them there were, the more confidence he had.
And that I can do it with the giant is what we were talking, you and me, about the point of crucifixion. From then on, you know. Up to that point, you are developing, and then you are crucified as to yourself, because you know, with God, I can take on the world.
One of the biggest mistakes that people make with the idea of faith is that they think it's the same as optimism or positive thinking. They think, if I just commit myself to this, if I just believe it can happen, that's not faith. Faith is a gradual experience of God delivering you from situations until you get to the point when they don't even bother you anymore. That's what faith is.
But there's a word in there, you've got to acknowledge that along the way. I mean, God could be doing it if you don't know where it's coming from.
Right.
And acknowledge it, it's not going to do that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, just quickly... on page 2, it's just basically, I won't go through those, but that those quotes on page 2 describe Swedenborg's call and the reason for why he was called, which had to do with the opening of the spiritual sense of the word. So that gives context. If you go over to page 3... the first two quotes there from the Arcana Celestia have to do with how it is the word that connects us with heaven. But just coming down, so just in terms of still keeping on the theme of preparation, these are some quotes taken from Tafel's documents. So just to show that, you know, that there's a progression in this preparation. Before my mind was opened so that I can converse with spirits, and thus be persuaded by living experience, there existed with me for several years such evidences that I now wonder I could remain. That I now wonder I could remain all the while unconvinced of the Lord's government by means of spirits. During several years, not only had I dreams by which I was informed concerning the things on which I was writing, but I experienced also, while writing, changes of state, there being a certain extraordinary light in the things which were written. Afterwards, I had many visions with closed eyes, and light was given me in a miraculous manner. There was also an influx from spirits, as manifest to the sense, as if it had been to the senses of the body. There were infestations in various ways by evil spirits when I was in temptations, and afterwards, when writing anything to which the spirits had an aversion, I was almost possessed by them, so as to feel something like a tremor. Fiery lights were seen and conversations heard in the early morning, besides many other things, until at last a spirit spoke a few words to me, when I was greatly astonished at his perceiving my thoughts. I was afterwards, when my mind opened, astonished that I could converse with spirits, as the spirits were that I should wonder. From this it may be concluded how difficult it is for man to believe that he is governed by the Lord through spirits, and how difficult it is for him to give up the opinion that he lives his own life of himself without the agency of spirits. And then from Heaven and Hell, he says, I was elevated into the light of heaven interiorly by degrees, and in proportion as I was elevated, my understanding was elevated, so that I was gradually enabled to perceive things which at first I did not perceive, and finally such things as it had been impossible for me to comprehend.
Can I
just
ask,
yeah,
where does psychology come in on this, and, you know, like, repressed memories and all?
Yeah, look, that is a fascinating question. The idea that there are instances in Swedenborg's accounts where spirits both impart memory, so he is actually thinking from them, and they think from him. So, you know, it opens up potentially a whole new way of looking at repressed memory. What is it? You know, not wanting to, you know, draw away from people's experience of what's coming through psychotherapy, but at times, what the writings give us in terms of insight is the possibility that the memories that we see as repressed, if we're experiencing those later on, may well not be what we actually think they are. And so the end of the day, I suppose one of the important things is, rather than getting absorbed in repressed memory and what that might be, get a handle on some truths and start living from those, and allow those to become established in our life, and then see where those things sit in relation to that. Because it can be like digging a pit. That's, you know, my experience, people never get out of.
It's like William Glasser and reality therapy, where he emphasises not forget the past and all that, but actually choose, you know, set your course, where you want to go, with what you want to believe, how you want to form what you understand about personal life experience and your own psychology, go forward in your reality with that. Mm. And I have a lot of time for that.
Mm. You know, our...
go back.
Yeah. And you know, the evidence is that even our normal memory, over time, becomes fashioned in accordance with our motivations.
Yes.
That's the thing. So what spiritual work offers is a way of actually purifying the motivations, and then we can probably be more confident in the way the memories are structured. You know. So.
This is an unopen question, but this is, you've been doing a lot of study in this area. Do you think it's possible for a human being, any one of us, to actually think on our own? And I don't know the answer to this, though I have my thoughts on it. Is it possible for myself, say, as a human being, to think on my own? Or can I only think when I'm with angels or with spirits and it's a connection? In other words, it's me and spirits thinking, or it's me and angels thinking, always constantly in connection with angels or spirits, and that actually it is impossible for me to think outside of being in connection with spirits or angels. How did this come up with your study of the subject?
Yeah, I mean, the writings would say that we are so intimately related to the spiritual world that we don't think our own original thoughts. So we ground. It's not.
I watch that. Sorry, I'm bugging you. I watch that because I think that takes it away from us too far. Myself, I think we are always in reception of thoughts and impulses from spirits, for want of a better word. But I think the fact that we can think what we're thinking is ours.
Can we think what we're thinking, or are we just choosing?
Well, it's choosing. Yeah. I can think about what I am getting and thinking, and I feel, I would understand that to be a Julian connection, not a spirit saying, now you've got this thought, I'm going to tell you how you're going to understand that thought, because then I'm at the mercy of everything going on around me.
Yeah, but
that's intolerant.
That's right. I mean, it more works on an affectional level. So spirits don't know they're in communication with people on Earth, right? So it's more impulse and thought in accordance with our leading affection. Our leading affection gravitates towards ideas that support it. So what we do, we are constantly in the effort to build around us a reflection of our own minds. So the people we gravitate towards, the environments we move in, all of that is basically a reflection of where our leading affection lies. And that attracts certain spiritual influences. And then we own those as our own, and we're responsible for that. So the human mind, Martin was talking about the rational, the two kinds of rationals. The first rational works to confirm what is false. So my life is my own. We feel that intensely, that our life is our own, right?
We're in control.
The Lord alone has life. His life flows into us, and the effect of that is that we feel life as if it is our own. But
that's exactly
not
how I feel. The model that seems to be the rule for me, but we actually then have, it appears to me very much that we actually are living, each one of us right now, with two minds. And one of these minds, call the outer mind or the reactive mind or the proprium, is where actually spirits are living, and bad spirits, and giving us these negative thoughts and feelings and angers, and we lose it sometimes, and it's like we have another mind where the angels are living. And so at any time we're sitting sort of in the middle, and these spirits can come through, and if we take notice of that thought, geez, I'm going to stab this knife in, or I'm going to drive my car off the cliff, wow, you know, this one's got to come in then and say, no, don't do that. And we're really in the company of angels and spirits here. I mean, we get the choice, of course, we're interacting and we get the choice which one to listen to, but sometimes I wonder, who the hell am I here? I seem to be doing is making a choice whether to listen to this lot of thoughts from this mind or listen to this thoughts from this mind.
There's a quote in the writings, and I don't know where it is, so you'll have to look it up, but it says, to think from self is divine.
Is divine.
Is divine.
In Swedenborg.
No, to think from self is a divine trait, because the Lord alone has a self. To have self-generated thoughts is divine, right? We are recipients being created finite beings.
You have the rose colour lens and all of that, that changes the imagery and perception, so therefore it looks to be completely original thought somewhere.
That's right, and that gives us a sense of having a life. You know, think about it like this, and we'll have to wind up here, but the in Divine Love and Wisdom, in those notes I handed out yesterday, it talks there about the fact that this is axiomatic. You cannot go any further in thinking about this. And that is, the divine itself is source, And all that comes from the divine in terms of what is finite is receptive, is a receiving vessel. That is a definition of what being finite is. The Lord alone has life. The Lord alone is wisdom. The Lord alone is love. You know, all these traits that we think we have are actually, in reality, the Lord's alone. We have them as if of ourselves, but they are not from us. Right? So your independence and your autonomy is a gift from the Lord, but it's a gift through the principle of as if of yourself. Because if you were able to generate anything from yourself, you would be God.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So that means we're a radio, then, and we're either tuning in to this lot over here or this lot over here. So we get the opportunity to tune in. If we tune into this, we're going to play beautiful music. If we tune into this, it's going to be like hellish. And we're like that. All we get to do is choose which station we're going to tune into and play that music. If that's what you're saying, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. What we tune into. Yeah. So I just say, you know, these are kind of, I've put these notes together and hopefully in some sort of coherent order in terms of a progression. So I've jumped around a bit in terms of these notes and pulling out bits and pieces. But yeah, look, I just hope as you read them, it'll give you some new insights perhaps into the whole idea of what it means to have one's spiritual eyes open, the progression involved, and the very need for preparation for that experience to take place.
You can extend the seminar by a week just by reading your notes.
This, something I didn't say, but I had mentioned to a couple last night, and spoke to Liz about it today. Just gives you a bit of a different feel. Or sense of what was going on. So just, basically the idea was, or is that, what had happened was, is that the Lord's influx into the world at the time of Swedenborg had become such that he couldn't reach people in the world. So the natural heavens had become filled with falsity. You know, so people who were dying and had false ideas regarding spiritual things were entering the spiritual world, and effectively those ideas, because the Lord transitions or the influx is transitions through the various levels of the heavens, when it got to here it was being turned into what was evil and false. And so what was filtering through in terms of internal influx for people on earth, you know, they just couldn't think straight about spiritual things because that influx was disturbed at this level. So through preparing a vessel, by means of the word, yeah, over a lifetime, Swedenborg was prepared, as you will see in those notes that I handed out yesterday. But then, you know, and then a study of the word meant that within this mind, and everybody's mind is in connection, right, with the spiritual world, new ideas were being introduced. Ideas that were clearer ideas about how the spiritual world works. Now, when Swedenborg's spiritual sight was opened, so that effectively he entered into this realm and was able to converse with other spirits, have communication with spirits, these spirits with their false ideas were then being introduced to truer ideas that were able to be conveyed through this agency. Now, because in the spiritual world, as ideas are shared, it attracts those who are attracted to those ideas and it repels those who are in a disposition that, you know, those ideas don't match what their motives are. And so when you're talking about the second coming and the clearing out of this realm, Swedenborg, in a sense, was like a Trojan horse. The Lord could not meet these people directly or these spirits directly. He had to have an instrument, and the instrument was Swedenborg. So as a spirit, so I know this is in very concrete terms, but bear with me. So as a spirit came into contact with somebody, they communicated. So Swedenborg, you can be Swedenborg, I'll be the human spirit. As this communication, these ideas are introduced, and the spirit is talking to Swedenborg and thinks about it as Swedenborg's ideas, perhaps, much as what happens at this level of life as well. But the ideas go in. And then what happens is that as those ideas begin to be communicated out throughout the spiritual world, and there's this miracle that's taking place as people begin to realize, you know, what the Lord is actually doing, what starts to happen is that those that are repelled by truths basically move further away and enter into their hells. And those who were held in bondage here, who had some kind of good but didn't have the clarity of ideas, it begins to clear out and they are then elevated into the heavens.
Can I just say, David, this will actually come up large in Apocalypse Revealed after coffee.
Okay.
Because it's exactly that dynamic.
Great. So,
but you're putting it in terms of Swedenborg's experiences.
That's right.
Pictured in that material.
And this is how the Lord makes his second coming.
On that basis, then, which I love, that's... We would now represent Swedenborg down the bottom, or anybody who's doing good. So we can actually feed goodness back up into the spiritual world.
And our process is exactly the same at this level of life. Mm-hmm. You know, we come into contact with ideas, and other ideas in our minds that don't sit well with those are pushed away, and those ideas that do sit well are drawn closer. And so it strengthens what is good.
Now, the amazing thing to me with all this life then is basically, I know love is number one, but putting love aside for the moment, life is all about then gaining intelligence, getting closer to reality, and sifting out falsity, false ideas, false understandings. Life is really all creating
That's
intelligence,
right.
True understanding.
There is no true light without good.
Did that barrier disappear and the Lord was then able to influence down to earth?
On a large scale, you know, on the macro scale, yes, that's what's happened. For us on a micro scale, it has to happen for us personally. But the ability for it to happen is due to what's happened in a macro kind of way. Yeah. All right, thanks.